James Cannon with you through till 6 o'clock. Lots on the show, including it being the first Monday of the month. It's time to bring in the gadget detective. Fevzi is standing by. And if you've got a question, you can get in touch with us. 81333 is our text. Start any message with the word radio. Or you can drop me an email, cannon@bbc.co.uk. Fevzi, afternoon. I've got to tell you, we had a complaint after your last outing last month.
Am I in trouble?
No, well, not really. No. It was a jokey complaint, but I've lost the actual email, which is rather reflective of my admin abilities. But it was a chap saying that we'd cost him the best part of £140 because his wife immediately went online and bought the scales that you had highlighted last month, which were not cheap, but they could tell numerous things about you as a human being, couldn't they?
That was, not your personality, thank goodness, but Withings was the brand. And the one we looked at, I think, that week was the Body Cardio Plus. And it tells all sorts of things about you, including an indication of your cardiovascular health, because it works out how hard your arteries are indirectly. But what I would say about that is the Body Cardio Plus is the top of the range of three. So there's two sort of cheaper ones below it that do most of it, but I think only the top end one has the speed at which your blood is coursing through your veins measurement. Wow. But I find it just incredible that you can stand on something and it can tell so much about you. How much of you is bone? How much is muscle? There's even a mode for pregnant women where it will calculate the weight of the child within.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I did a search afterwards, and there were word to the wise. If you ever go to buy anything online, always just think of the... If ever, when you get to the checkout page, it says promo code. I always think, oh, well, hang on, they must be open to it. And then just do a search with their name and promo code. And, you know, I would say you get about a 25% hit rate of actually finding one, which is not bad, is it?
Yeah. No, it's always worth... And also, I'll give you a tip. There's a website called camelcamelcamel.com. I don't know why. It's like several humps.
Three humps, yeah.
But, yeah. But what that does is it tracks the price of items on amazon.co.uk. So if you see an item on Amazon, you know, it's on offer, but really, is that really a good price, historically speaking? Is that lower than it has been? Or is that... Sometimes I've seen things on offer, and when I've checked, they're actually higher than they have been for some time. What Camel 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 does is you cut and paste a link to the item into their website, and it shows you a graph of whatever period you want of the fluctuations in the price of that item. So you can see if that's really a genuinely good price or not. Of course, you can check it at other retailers as well. But as far as Amazon is concerned, you can just see. Because sometimes you see, oh, it's been 100 quid forever and now suddenly it's 70. Well, that's a deal. But often, you know, it says it's low and it's higher than it's ever been. The fact that they're reducing it doesn't... They say they're reducing it doesn't mean a lot. You have to check. So do your homework. CamelCamelCamel.com.
Okay, I'll try that out. Buyer beware, as I always say. Here we go. Email, Mary. I'm not very knowledgeable about computers. However, I do have an iPad and I have an iPhone, and I quite often get notifications saying to install an update. Is it safe to do this? I get worried that you don't know what you're downloading.
Okay, so the good news is that the Apple ecosystem is safer than Google's Android ecosystem, because the apps in the App Store are checked before they're uploaded, whereas with Google, what they tend to do is they just put stuff up there, and then if there's complaints, they take it down again. So it's sort of after the event. But that's not to say that you can't get malware in there. In terms of updates, so it depends what we're talking about. If you're talking about updates to the operating system, I would say, if you're being offered, for example, iOS 14 or 14.01, as it would be now, I would wait a bit for that, because I put the updates on straight away, so I know if there's any problems and I can advise others if there are. I can tell you that one of the ones I loaded on was an iPhone 7 Plus, which is a 3 or 4 year old machine, and it slowed down something terribly. And Apple have been sued for this in some European countries for effectively, you know, making otherwise worthwhile machines very, very slow. Now, they may fix that in future iterations of 14. But if you're being offered 14 at the moment, or 14.1, and you're on 13, I would stay away from it for a bit and let it settle in and see if they can fix it.
How long's the settle-in period then, Fevzi?
It really, you need to do some research. I mean, tweet me at Gadget Detective and I will tell you, because there's no fixed period. Is if they fix it, then I can tell you that they've fixed it. But sometimes they don't fix it. And what ends up happening is people end up buying new phones. Because once you've gone from 13 to 14, for example, you can't usually go back. They stop issuing the old version. They call it signing the security certificate. So you get stuck on 14. You can't go back. And then if your machine is a little bit older, your iPhone or your iPad is a little bit older, it may struggle. So what I'm getting at the moment on the older iPhone that I've tested it on is sometimes you go to a screen and you try and, you know, scroll up and down and it just doesn't respond for several seconds. Sometimes I actually have to stop the app and restart it. Sometimes I have to restart the machine. So it's not very, it's sort of struggling. And it's disappointing because that's been in the, that iOS 14 has been in development for a long time, but it's not unheard of. Sometimes they fix it, but sometimes they don't, you know, because they can't, because the software is intrinsically more demanding, and sometimes it's just bugs that they haven't, you know, ironed out yet. So if we're talking about iOS 14, I'd hold off it for a bit if you can. If we're talking about apps in the App Store, generally they're safety up to update to. But what I would say is when you're first installing an app, check the provenance of the app. Is it from a trusted supplier? Is of apps, have a lot of people reviewed it and given it good reviews over a long period of time, or is it brand new and you know with no reliable track record behind it? Also check what permissions the app is asking for. So those, when you install an app, you give the app certain rights to access, let's say, the camera or the microphone or your location or your contact list. It can be any number of things. Look at the list. I know people don't like doing this, but look at what you're agreeing to, because I'll give you an example. I tested a Fitbit watch and it doesn't work without the app. And to install the app, I had to agree to the terms and conditions, which included allowing them to make a copy of my contact list.
Well, no. Yeah, exactly. No, like you'd invite somebody into your house and say, here's my address book, off you go.
Exactly. I sent it back and I refused to review the item because I couldn't review the item. And if I actually tried putting it on a machine with no contact list on it and then putting the contact list afterwards, and then it still grabbed the contact list.
Naughty.
And the reason why they do it is because they want to then say, oh, Fevzi uses Fitbit to all my friends, and would you like to join him in it? And that sort of thing, and sort of trying to get this sort of group community exercise thing going on. But frankly, that's not good enough. They don't need to do that, and it shouldn't be a condition when the device doesn't work without the app, and the app you can't have without agreeing to all the terms. You can't cherry-pick the terms.
Amazing.
Right. And it should be on the box.
Let's go to your gadget of the month. What have you chosen?
Okay, so this is something from a company called Crucial, or a brand called Crucial. It's called the X8, letter X8, portable SSD. So you may know that there are modern types of disk drives that appear inside computers called solid-state drives. They have replaced traditional hard disk drives, and the reason why they've replaced them is they don't have any moving parts. They're much faster. They use less energy. You can drop them, and they tend to survive better than something with a spinning drive inside it. Now, you can get those inside a computer, but you can also get them externally and linked in via some iteration of USB. This is called the Crucial X8 Portable SSD. And to give you an idea of the size, it's about 4 inches by 2 inches and just less than half an inch thick. So a bit like a bar of soap, that sort of size and shape of a bar of soap. And this thing is incredibly fast and incredibly capacious. So it comes in three different capacities, 500 gigabytes, 1,000 gigabytes, also known as a terabyte, and 2 terabytes. And to give you an idea of what you can actually store on that, if you take just the middle one, the 1 terabyte, that's about 250,000 photos from a 12 megapixel camera. It's about 500 hours of HD video, so you can carry with you in your shirt pocket 250 high definition movies. And the reason why that you might want to do that is this doesn't just attach to, you know, Windows computers and Mac computers. It does that, but you can attach it to iPad Pros with a USB connector, Chromebooks, and so let's say you're going on a journey and you've got kids in the back of the car and they want to see videos on their break, then you've got a whole library of videos with you. You don't have to have an internet connection. You can also, with a Mac computer, you can boot it, you can start it off an external drive. So instead of having all the information inside the Mac computer, you can have it on the external drive, the operating system, the applications, all your data, everywhere.
Why would you want to do that?
Well, let's say you work where there's a Mac and you've got a Mac at home. Instead of having to take a laptop to and from work, assuming that there is a laptop available, you just plug it in. Or let's say you're working with an older Mac computer, and you're going to update, then having it on an external drive is much easier. And upgrading, you know, if you try and upgrade an Apple Mac, with that, it's either impossible or you tend to void your warranty. So by having this as an external drive, you can upgrade an older machine, give it a SSD. You know, even until a few weeks ago, they were still selling really expensive Apple Mac computers with rotating hard drives in them, you know, like last century technology, essentially, and they were doing that. Or one of these things, 1 terabyte, can store 6.5 million documents, which is the equivalent of 1,300 filing cabinets.
Right. Give us the money there.
Okay. Money. Let's have a look. Where is it? There we go. So for the 500 gigabyte, the half a terabyte is £110-ish. The 1 terabyte, which is twice as much, is about 150, and about 300 for the 2 terabytes. Most people will be satisfied with 500 gig. You know, it's really more advanced users that would need more than that. And the other reason for getting the smaller one, I would say, is by the time you fill it up, unless you're going to fill it up immediately, that's a different matter, but by the time you fill up the capacity, the other ones have dropped in price. So yeah, four and a half stars out of five, and also incredibly fast. If you've got what's called a USB-C connector on your computer, it will run, this particular one will run twice as fast as even USB 3. But if you've got the older USB 3 or even USB 2, it will just run at whatever speed the computer's capable of accepting data. But again, if you upgrade your computer in the future and you've got the new USB-C connector, then suddenly you get an upgrade because all your storage is accessed much more quickly.
Okay,
four and a half stars out of five.
Well, there you go. That's not bad, is it? There's a bit of tech news. Google have launched a new AI secretary. Can you explain this?
Yeah, I actually love this. This was just announced a few days ago, a Google launch, and the feature's called Hold for Me. And initially, it's only, I think, on the Google Pixel 5 and the Pixel 4a. These are Google's own versions of Android phones. You know, lots of people produce Android phones, but Google make their own called Pixel range. So the 5 and the 4a will come with this feature. And what it does is it uses their artificial intelligence, something called Google Duplex, which was first demonstrated a couple of years ago and is an incredible technology and a bit scary as well. What it does is it holds for you. You know, when you get put on hold and you get the hold music and you keep listening because you don't want to miss the call and so forth. What this does is it waits until a person answers it, and then it alerts you to the fact. And what it does is it talks to the person who's answered and encourages them to hold for the few moments that it takes you to come. It actually speaks to them. And this is, I mean,
a game changer for anyone who's hung on a line for any length of time.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, this is the sort of thing that would make someone change from an Apple product to an Android product, because it really does revolutionize, you know, your life. And I've seen Google Duplex demonstrated where it works as an assistant. In the demonstration, this female voice of the AI, Google Duplex, rang a hairdresser and made an appointment on behalf of, in quotes, their client, i.e. you, the owner of the device. And it worked in such a clever way. It asked for, it spoke as a human being. It had human inflections. It said, and all that. It sounded human. And it asked for an appointment at a particular time. The person on the other end said that they didn't have an availability for that. They offered another one, which the Duplex knew wasn't suitable, and then asked for another time. And it then said, can you do between 10 and 12? And it took the 12 o'clock appointment and it gave the details. And it sounded human. And so much so now, there's an argument breaking out about whether these AIs, when we interact with humans, should have to declare themselves as being non-human. Because they're getting to the point where we can't always tell. They're passing at least in this limited framework, what's called a Turing test. The Turing test is named after the computer scientist Turing, who basically said, you know, a machine is intelligent if you can't tell you're talking to a machine.
Scary stuff.
That's where we are at the moment.
I don't even know whether you're real now.
Well, real is a relative term. I mean, what's interesting is, of course, is my AI will talk to your AI and people will stop having to talk to each other. But again, I mean, that is a liberating technology, and that was demonstrated live 2 years ago. And now it's starting to work itself into actual products that are included in the operating system. And it's changing everything. And Apple needs to be careful, because Apple is very good at respecting our privacy. Okay, Google grabs as much information as it can. Apple respects your privacy arguably more. But the downside of that is Apple don't have the huge amounts of big data to feed its AI programs to make them smarter. So Siri is not very smart compared to Google's equivalent. Google collects much more information, recordings of our speech and all the rest of it, and it uses it to train its AI. And the net result is that the AI becomes much smarter and can do things like this. So it's this interesting balance between, you know, privacy on one hand and function on the other hand. And if you're prepared to go with Google, then there are now, you know, Google is starting to show some, you know, clear blue water from Apple in terms of the AI side of things.
Fevzi, we've run out of time, but good talking to you. Just remind me of where we can follow you on social media.
Twitter, @GadgetDetective. If you want to know when it's safe to go iOS 14, tweet me and I'll tell you.
Okay, nice one. Well, we'll catch up in a month's time with another gadget, but good stuff. And we'll all be weighing ourselves on the scales that in the interim time. Fevzi, appreciate it. Thank you.